As a developer, how do we keep our mind and body healthy? Let's find out.
Welcome to the FoodJ Podcast, all your news about OpenJDK.
At DevOx and JFall, I talked with Georgios Diamantopoulos, Lutske De Leeuw, Tom Coles, Jessica Siewert and Rio Sam about how to keep physically and mentally healthy as software developers. Many topics to handle here, like the impact of AI on how valuable we feel, how careers got impacted by COVID, how we work in and with remote teams, how to get to know new colleagues and much more. Yes, even a sidestep to compare the Java with .NET community. Let's get started with Georgios. He attended DevOx as a speaker with a talk about keeping your body healthy.
It's something that we don't talk about very much, and I'd like to change that. And that's the impact that our work has to our bodies, and basically that we're not taking care of ourselves as well as we take care of the systems that we build, and some suggestions on what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm your perfect subject because I work at home. I have my home office. I never leave it except to take a walk with the dog. What am I doing wrong?
I haven't seen you, but I think we have to forget the idea that we're doing something wrong, in the sense that nobody can do it right. If you sit on a chair for 8 hours, there's no way to keep the perfect posture. The body just can't stand still for 30 minutes. And I've learned from myself that over the years, I forced myself to stay still and forget that I'm uncomfortable. And I'm trying to change that. So I'm trying to realize when my body is starting to get, like wanting to move and get up. Mm-hmm. It's a start. And then I think it's also good to allocate specific time probably at the end of your workday, to recover from all the sitting. So do a little bit of movement and a little bit of stretching. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important.
Yeah, if I reflect on myself, the thing which changed the most by working at home is that I don't have the time anymore in the car where you can reflect before you arrive home. So I think that's indeed an important thing to do after the work, still drive home.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we have all these things that we introduce into our lives to get some benefit, like working from home, because we can do other things. But then I find that most of us actually don't get that benefit because we let the work or whatever kind of swallow that time. So I think we also need to become more conscious. Like if I'm working from home, then let's make sure that I am actually spending more time with loved ones. I am taking time to exercise or whatever it is that I thought I was going to do when I stopped going to the office.
Mm-hmm. Is a treadmill something we should have? The walking band, or how do you call it in English?
Yes. Personally, I'm not a believer of that. I think when I do a task, I want to be completely focused on it. And movement especially, I think, is jarring to whatever else you might be doing, especially if you're doing creative work. So I would say forget the treadmill. Just get up and walk outside.
I bought a dog especially for that reason.
Absolutely. I mean, pets are amazing. I have two cats, and I don't take them for walks, but they give me time to focus on them and kind of be conscious of my surroundings.
Is there one specific topic from your presentation that you can highlight now?
I think something that, when people ask me what I'm going to talk about, and I say I'm going to talk about, you know, our health and so on, they go, oh, standing desks, right? And I'm like, not exactly. That's part of it. I think one little known fact that's very important is that actually stress can shape our bodies if we don't recover from it. So the motion patterns that we that the body produces as we experience stress make muscle contractions repeatedly. And if you do that repeatedly, then that stays permanently. So people kind of become like this with their neck in the front and chest closed, which of course is also a position that is made worse by sitting, because we do that by sitting too.
So the combination of sitting and stress is something we should either avoid or get out of from time to time.
Yes, we need to recover from stress, which comes basically by moving our body, not necessarily by walking or something like this, but moving our joints. And I will share some resources in my talk.
Very nice that this kind of topic also appears at a conference like this. You have a software development company?
That's right, yes.
Java software?
No, I learned Java when I was at university, but then I went to the dark side. So we're using .NET and React, and we're called Zero to MVP.
So we have an intruder?
That's right.
Can you compare C# .NET with Java? Is there a specific reason you're choosing C#?
For me, at the time that I adopted it, it was because Java was a little bit more, had very specific ideas and kind of would force you on them. And I found C# a little bit more practical in that sense. But I think we also need to realize that they're different tools, yes, but they're so close to each other that we need to speak to each other more and realize we work in the same field, we serve the same people, and at the end of the day, if we don't make something that's useful, we failed.
Indeed, there is no right or wrong language. As a developer, you need to know the principles, and then you can switch even between languages. So you're here to learn about Java, I guess, also.
Absolutely. I take the opportunity to see what you guys are doing. And, you know, I think it always comes in waves where, you know, one community will make an advancement and then the other communities will catch up. So it's always good to see what other people are doing and say, hey, you know, maybe that's useful in my world.
Lutske De Leeuw was a guest in an earlier podcast about AI and LLMs. I asked her if we should be afraid of our job and how big the impact of AI will be on how we feel as a developer.
I think it's very big because AI, you can get around it nowadays, and you don't have to be scared about it because people think, oh no, AI is going to take over my job, but it isn't. It only makes more errors and more, and we still have to fix that. So there's one person that has to fix that, as developers.
Will we lose value if we don't use these tools?
Yes, I think we lose value because it's a very useful extension of you. So you can ask them what's happening here in the code, if you see some spaghetti code or something, or if you want to just brainstorm a rubber duck but want something to talk back, then you can use it. And I think in the future we use more and more AI and it's going to generate more and more stuff. But then you have to know really what's going on because it doesn't know what it was generated, and sometimes it hallucinates and stuff, and then the real profession, what is it, what's happening, everything under the hood is needed. So I think our value increases over time.
So you could already be a full stack copy-paste developer when you took code from Stack Overflow, for instance. Now the same problem arises with these chat systems. It just spits out code, but you really have to understand what you do.
Yes, exactly. And you can ask, for example, ChatGPT to explain it, but it still can be hallucinating. So it's just the next generation of Stack Overflow. Don't copy-paste everything because it's probably wrong. So see and learn what's doing. But it's very helpful to just pick your brain and see, oh, some things they suggested, but probably you have to do that. But then you can grow to that and learn from it. So it's very good to do it and learn from it, but not just copy-paste and be done.
Some use it as a pair programming colleague, almost. Yeah. Is that a good approach?
Yeah, that's a good approach. It's just, like I said before, the rubber duck that talks back, yeah.
During COVID, did the disease have any influence on how you work? Did you work more from home? Did it have an impact on how you feel yourself in your role as a developer?
Yeah, it's changed on how we're working and now more remote. And I think now when you go to the office, it's more valuable because all the coffee talks and then you get new ideas and stuff. And you have to be more empathic because when you see it on camera, you don't see the full body. So then you're missing that part and it can be really dangerous to do assumptions and stuff. So yeah, it's really different than before COVID.
What tips do you have for people who are sitting at a desk the whole time?
go out and walk. That's also always good for your health, and minimum of 20 minutes just to get it out of your head, take some new ideas. And if you're tired, just give into that. Do something else and not try to, okay, but it's in my time frame, so I have to do it now. Now, please go take a coffee or do something else and go back. And especially if you're always at home, just call randomly a colleague, hey, how are you doing? Because sometimes if you don't have a family at home and you're living on your own, it gets very lonely, and people forget that if you have a lot of family at home and stuff. So just call that colleague. Even if you think it's going great, you just talk a bit, bits and beats and everything. But yeah, that's nice to do.
The coffee machine moment we are missing at home.
Yeah, I've missed it a lot when I'm working at home. So yeah.
You said asking a colleague. So I think that's one of an important topic in the Java community. It's a very open community. You can just ask any technical question to anyone. But should we dare to ask really mental questions?
Yeah, because that's really still a little bit of let's don't talk about mental, because then you think you're crazy. But it's, I'm very happy that's now more and more accepted. That's it's okay if you're not okay. So I'm saying, oh, no, I'm not feeling well today. No, it's not going good. And then everybody around you can say, okay, can we help? Maybe it can. But then you know, and you can adapt to it. So it's very important to be aware of it and be accepted about it. And when you have more safe space with your colleagues, you're doing more because you're thinking, okay, I can bring in now ideas, I can have a bad day, and then you get more and more productive, and if it's good, it's more happy. So yeah, I'm all on more mental health and talk about it.
And we have to admit, we all have bad days.
Yes, of course. Yeah, in Dutch we say zonder dalen geen pieken, and that means without the bad days we don't have good days. So yeah, we need those, sadly enough.
Tom Coles attended DevOps during the first week in a new job. He just started as a DevRel for Timefold, and I asked him how he felt in this new role.
Frankly, a bit scary. It's a role that I've been looking into doing for quite a while. I've been speaking at a lot of conferences anyway for years, and I like sharing content, I like educating people and really helping people solving problems they have. I had talks in the past about learning how to learn, also a bit about dealing with change and such. So this, everyone who speaks to me says, Tom, this is the most natural transition you could have made. But it's still scary because I was at my previous company for 11 and a half years, so it was quite a jump. And then immediately being here and being among friends and being able to share the good news with everyone, and everyone being genuinely happy with the transition, it's cool to see.
I invited you for this specific podcast because you had a talk about the danger of a burnout, which is a very difficult topic for most developers. How do you deal with stress in our jobs?
Yeah, that was part of my learning through Tinkering talks about learning to learn. And I tell the story about how I ended up in a burnout. And I ended up in a burnout because I wanted to do too many things at the same time. For example, I'm a Java developer by nature. That's also why we're here, because we love Java. And I suddenly had to do .NET on a project. And I'm not dissing the .NET programming language, it's fine. But I kind of underestimated what that change meant. Because I was a lead developer, I was supposed to lead a team, and I also, so all of a sudden I was a junior .NET developer. I went from very senior Java developer to, oh, how do I do logging? How do I do the simplest things? And what I learned there is, and that's the danger, is that there's so many different things coming at us. And in this case, it was .NET that came to me. But sometimes we do this to ourselves when we focus. We have no focus, basically. We see, oh, this cool thing and that cool thing. And I see a lot of people, when they leave a conference like DevOps, they go home and they want to try everything. They want to try the latest Quarkus thing and Gradle. What's this and this GraalPy stuff that I saw? And that's one of the risks that we have. We're sometimes too enthusiastic about things, and we want to know everything, but then we don't always have time to do that. And that messes with our brain a little bit.
A real challenge, I know. I know the same feeling. Do you have some tips you can share? How should we focus on one thing, or should we just try to follow everything?
I think there's a certain degree of depth you can follow something. So the way I do it is I'm on Twitter a lot. I follow a lot of, I read a lot of articles also on Fujay and other blogs. And I have this you know, the T-shaped profile that's often spoken about. I do that for knowledge as well. I try to be T-shaped, meaning I want to at least be aware that certain things exist, but to know in depth how something works, I am very specific and very intentional about that. So one example I have is I only code Java and maybe a bit of JavaScript if I really have to, but I decided to stay away from a bunch of other programming languages. Even Kotlin I haven't touched yet. Maybe I will in the future, but focusing on a limited set and knowing that there's enough of a job market, there's enough interesting stuff to do there, I think that's quite key. Because I see a lot of junior developers that are like, oh yeah, and I know a bit of Python and a bit of Ruby and a bit of this and a bit of that, but you don't really know anything in depth. So I would say focus is the most important part. And really check, and maybe the biggest tip I can give is try to figure out what the valuable next step is. Because one of the reasons I also came close to a burnout was I wanted to learn machine learning, but I didn't know any math, and this was pre-LLM, so it was really math heavy. So I had to recognize in myself that if I wanted to learn machine learning, I first had to take the smaller step of learning a few math algorithms. And if you don't step back and think about this, then the risk is that you'll be annoyed at yourself and think, oh, I'm stupid because I can't do this machine learning thing. Maybe even in a simpler example that I have, if you want to learn CSS animations, then you first need to learn CSS. And if you because if you don't know CSS yet, then CSS animations, you may want to learn it, but you need to do these intermediate steps. And I get so often developers that say, oh, but I'm too stupid to learn this. It's like, no, you're not too stupid. You just need to figure out what the intermediate steps are. And I think we see that a lot in our industry, especially when you see cool speakers at an event like this that go really in-depth, and you're like, yeah, I want to know that as well. But know that they have had an entire journey already. So that would be a focus, and don't be too hard on yourself.
You talked about imposter syndrome without really mentioning it even. People think I'm not good enough. Is that something, how do you deal with that feeling?
If I knew the definitive answer, I would not be feeling imposter syndrome as often as I do. To give a personal story, maybe, when I became a Java champion a while ago, I couldn't believe it. Like, because you become a Java champion because other Java champions vote you to be one, and I was like, no, they made a mistake. This can't be. I don't belong in this group. And I think getting an outside perspective is always useful. So my wife was very useful. She's always useful, I'm sorry. She was very helpful in getting me out of this. She basically tricked my mind by saying, oh, so you have imposter syndrome and you don't believe you're a Java champion. Yeah, of course. So these are all people you admire, right? Yes, they're people I admire. I admire all of them and I don't believe I'm part of them. So this is a problem, because you admire them, you think they're smart, they voted you in, and now you're saying they made a mistake. Ah, good point, see? And I think having some imposter syndrome is normal. I have it now with the new role. I've just became a dev role, but I try to just embrace it a little bit and use this feeling of I'm not good enough, twist it around and go, okay, but what can I do about it? So I've been talking to a lot of other DevRel people here to learn as much as I can about the new role I'm doing, and using that as a driver to drive you forward instead of something that holds you back too much. The feeling will often be there for many cases, if it is being a junior developer that joins on a project for the first time, or someone starting a podcast for the first time. It always feels like, oh, but there's so many people that can do it so much better than I can. But try to flip it around as a trigger and a motivator for your journey to become better. Try to not let it overwhelm you, but use it as so there's more I can learn. So yeah, let's try to do that. Let's talk to some people.
And maybe the most important message is everyone has imposter syndrome, even the ones that become a Java champion.
Yeah. Sometimes I think these champion titles and these all these acolytes, these awards or terms you get, in the end I think it's all we're all normal people, so sometimes we feel like, oh, I can't do this. But try to use that as a trigger to find help. Because if there's one thing that I've learned in my career, it's you can't do almost anything alone. It always gets better when you can ask some help. So, and to find help, networking and socializing with people really helps. And what I noticed now, especially in the last couple of days when I was talking about this new role, when you talk to people and say, hey, I just transitioned to this role. You are doing this role for years. Can you give me some tips? Most of them are like, oh, yeah, I was totally like you when I started. Let me help you. And that's just the best feeling. So reach out for help, take it easy, and have some fun. Use it as a trigger to progress.
Jessica Seward had a talk at JFL, Help, I Hate My Teammate. And I wondered how she personally handled such a situation.
The past decade, I've been across several situations where working together was difficult. Definitely from that I draw inspiration.
If you are hating your teammate, what should I do?
Well, it depends on the exact situation. If you really, really hate your teammate, I would say maybe it's the best thing to get out of there. Actually, at my talk, I suggest a few different things you could do.
Is it the most important thing just telling it or being open?
I think, yeah, well, as research also shows, being open about it, if you are going to pick this battle, that's definitely a first step. You could do that with people who are not in the conflict, at home or on the job, if you trust people. But make sure you're staying respectful for the others that may get into the conflict, and not to turn it into gossiping, but to stay in a constructive mind space, I would say. Yeah.
How important is the manager in such a case?
I think a manager could play a key role. Maybe it's not always necessary to involve the manager. Sometimes the manager gets involved regardless of whether he has to. I think it's it could be a very important role for the manager to help facilitate to find a resolution. Yes, definitely.
You have this whole group of Java people here. How is the mingling? What do you learn from all the people here?
Well, honestly, it's easiest to talk to people you already know. that's for sure. But even then, people that I know from a couple of years ago, it's nice to learn what they're doing by now and where they're at, and if they also well. I did Scala for a long time, now I'm doing Kotlin, and if others are also doing that, or went back to Java, or whatever. Yeah, that's like.
It's a good remark. I heard that at the conference or at a JUC or whatever, you should not talk to the people you already know. You should really, but as an introvert person, I make the same mistake. It's very difficult to get to speak to new people. Is that a bit the same problem? I hate my teammates. Is it just be open and start talking?
Oh, that's definitely a part of being in a good relationship with your teammates. When you have a new person on your team, especially then, and you're with teammates that you know a bit already, it's easier to remain with them. I think it's a natural first thing to do. But if you're open to this new person and his or her characteristics and what this person could bring to your team, maybe he or she can help you with something that you've been annoyed about in the code or in the program or in the project in a way you didn't think of yet. So yeah, I really tried to be open to this new teammate. But I have to say that it's something I have to be mindful of. Yeah, that's true.
Many people in the software industry work with remote colleagues. Rio Sam is originally from India and now lives and works in the Netherlands. So he is the perfect person to give us tips on how to work with or be part of such a remote team. He has a talk that he presented on different events about this topic.
It's mainly about the culture. Like working in a multicultural team is not that easy part. I've been doing it for the last 8 years. So I've been in different parts of that, like working from India, started working from India, then moved to Netherlands with a service-based company. Then I moved to a client, like bank itself. So it's not that easy. Everybody thinks, yeah, you have some money, you can buy somebody, you can get some developer somewhere and the work is not. No, it's not done that. It's more about understanding each other on the both ways. It works on both ways. Like you understand as a company of how this works. And as a developer, you need to understand, okay, how the company works and how I can contribute. So sometimes even if you are a really good developer, you won't be able to make progress. So that's where my talk comes with some challenges, how you face when you're working, not especially remotely, but in a multicultural team, how to communicate, how to give feedback, how to make decision-making, work with decision-making like that. So that's my talk about giving some tips on the impacts of culture in different topics in your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing I miss most. I work from home the whole time. I only see my colleagues at conferences and at some other events. What I miss the most is the coffee moment, the coffee machine.
Yes.
That you can just have every chat you have when you work remotely is an official meeting.
Yes.
Isn't that, should we look for a solution?
Yes, it's not. I will give an example. I was few months back, I pinged one of my colleagues just, hi, how are you? Hi, the person name and how are you? And he immediately replied me, hey, just tell me what you want. I don't want anything. I just want to know how you're feeling. That's how we are in now. Because now we think like every chat is about the work. No, it's not also about the work. It's about the person you are, how you are feeling. So that's where we are missing now a lot. So we need to improve. Like we need to intentionally plan some coffee meetings that we need to put it in our agenda. Okay, let me call him, have a chat with him, and make sure that you say, this is not about work. I had many coffee meetings with many people scheduled, and at the end, they were asking me, double checking with me that, okay, do you need to know something else? Do you need something work related? No, I don't need anything work related. I just need to know how you're feeling as a person. So that helps a lot when you next time, when you need something with work, or when you want help from him, or it will go very smoothly if you intentionally plan those meetings.
Is it something that managers and team leads should do? Should they schedule this? Or you also think this should happen between colleagues within a team?
Both ways. It's also a responsibility of your manager to do it as a team lead also. Like psychological safety is something missing in teams nowadays. So it's the response. I'm also a manager. So myself, I need to plan some moments with my team members, some coffee moments, some games. At the same time, developers can also plan that. Like, yeah, it's good they plan also there with their colleagues, have a coffee meeting or something with the teams. Just give them a call, not every day, but at least once in a month. Plan something, a short call, 10 minutes catch up. So I would say it's the responsibility of both managers and the developer. If a developer thinking, okay, I need to wait for my manager to plan something, yeah, it's not going to work.
Yeah, we just need to dare to ask it.
Yes. You need to, like the example I said, it's not everybody is now, people are adjusted to the work environment itself. We need to change that culture a little bit. So we need to have a push. Okay, let's have a game. Let's have a team. Maybe online also there are multiple games which can be fun. We played something recently with our team. We were like so hesitated to do half an hour game, but once we did, like everybody started. Okay, let's fight. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. And in the end, we only scheduled for half an hour. It went, I think, 45 minutes plus because everybody interested to do it. So yeah, somebody has to plan it, and I think once it's there, you can see the results. Mm-hmm.
Are there websites with games like this, or you can recommend some books, or where can we find those?
It's a website. Like if you just search in Google, there can be like we can find online games. Mm-hmm. You can find like we played the Battleship in Dutch is Seeslag. That one I played. We played online, and then a Clue Detective something. I forgot the name of it. Like we kind of a virtual investigation thing. A lot of websites, free websites are there, and also paid ones.
Yeah. So it's not the game itself which is important, but that you are online together and competing.
Correct.
You are from India, and I think you still work with people in India. How big issue is time differences in current day teams?
Yeah, it's always a challenge to plan meetings. So like now we are in our time difference is 4.5 hours with India. So it's even challenging. Like we will only get, like if you start really early in Netherlands, you will get around 6 hours or maybe 5 hours of currently working together. Then you need to plan all your meeting during those times. So that you can give your Indian colleagues some evening. We will take some of their evenings, but then make sure that sometimes I feel like people are not realizing. They put meetings at 4 o'clock in the evening in Dutch time. That is already it's so late in India. So that's kind of you are taking advantage, I would say. It's not good for the team in the long run. So if you care a little bit about your colleague, they will also give it to you and your company back a lot.
Indeed. Taking the time zone of your colleague into account. I live in Belgium, so I have colleagues in the US and in India, so I have the difference in both directions.
Yes.
So setting up a meeting can be very challenging indeed.
Yes.
It was my very first struggle when I started working in such a...
And even when you're making plans, like it's also in my talk, recently after Corona, I heard people saying, let's connect after lunch, okay? And my Dutch colleague expect me to be back in 15 minutes. That's not going to happen with an Indian lunch.
Yeah.
Indian lunch take at least 1 hour to prepare. And eating a Dutch sandwich will take maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes. And try eating and doing it with an Indian lunch. Mm-hmm. It's not possible. So those are some small things we don't realize when working together, which can impact a lot.
Could it also be a problem that people misunderstand each other because of cultural differences?
Yes, a lot. Because it depends. Each culture communicate. Like in technical terms, we call it low context communication and high context communication. Like, for example, in Netherlands or Belgium, I would say it's a high context low context communication, where you only need to listen to that sentence to understand the meaning. I would say an example, like in Dutch homes, if you go inside the home, they will ask you, do you need a cookie? They literally mean, do you need a single cookie or not? But at the same time, if you're in India, it's a high context, or China, it's a very high context culture where you need to assess the entire situation to know the meaning of what the person is saying. So those things will cause a lot of misunderstanding when you're working with a multicultural team. I can give you another example. One of my product owners, he was working with an Indian colleague. He asked the Indian colleague, hey, will you complete this on this time? Okay. And my Indian colleague said, yes, I will try. What he said exactly is, it's difficult. He will try, and there is no guarantee that it will work on the date. But what the Dutch product owner understood, yes. Just yes. He was expecting it to be delivered. Those are the starting point of misunderstandings in teams. So it affects a lot, these things.
Yeah, and isn't all the chatting we do with Teams, Zoom, Slack, whatever, also causing this? Because whatever you type,
yes,
sounds completely different for three. If three people are reading the same message, they can completely understand it differently. So shouldn't we take the phone more often or chat through video call instead of chatting? And certainly if we have some kind of discussion or there's a problem to be fixed, isn't typing something always causing problems?
We cannot say that. Like I also promote asynchronous communication a lot, because if we really want to have a meeting, like you said, with every colleague, with your Indian colleague and your US colleague, it's not that easy to find a time slot. So we cannot completely avoid typing, but whenever you type something, double check it. Like, are you using that? When English is not your mother tongue and my mother tongue, we are both are our second language. Then try to look at the wordings we are using. Try to be polite a little bit. That touch feedback or touch communication is so direct. We use a lot of direct words or strong words. Maybe try to reduce those wordings. Change can to could or something like that, which can help a lot. So I don't think we can avoid chatting completely. But if possible, I would say go for a call. Or if you are sitting together, go for the walk. Walk to that person first, talk. If not, then make a call. If not, try to chat.
Yeah. And if a chat turns out to become evil, then yes. stop chatting, yes. and have a
Correct.
Call.
Correct. Yeah. If the moment you realize this, the tone of chat is not going well, that's the best time to stop it and tell, hey, can we go for a call? And let's explain it. It's important. I had the moments many times that I thought, okay, I said something and I realized that, okay, the meaning, I think I didn't convey the meaning properly. I said immediately, hey, let's have a call. So it's important you to realize that and act upon it.
Is there anything more you want to share about this topic?
No, only thing is I believe in psychological safety part, where we don't consider that much in our teams. It's important to avoid, like you said earlier, burnouts, right? Burnouts can easily happen with your teams. So not only, sometimes we think that overworking will cause burnout. No, it is not at all the cause. There are many causes to burnout. So try to avoid it. Try to take account of cultural impact on your teams. That can help a lot.
That's it for this episode. Now step away from your computer and go take a walk. Thanks for listening or watching, and thanks to my guests, of course. Keep an eye on Fuji for future articles and podcasts about the development and everything related to the Java world. See you.
Give me a Fuji. Give me a J, give me the friends of OpenJDK.